This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin. A deadly outbreak of Ebola has been hailed by Médecins Sans Frontières as an unprecedented epidemic. Assisting in the efforts and providing data is Carton, a French non-governmental organization focused on helping MSF get a look at what's happening and the landscape they're operating in. Today, we will be speaking to representatives from both MSF and Carton. Explaining what's happening on the ground with MSF is Rémi Carrier, MSF Executive Director. Welcome to the show, Rémi.
Good afternoon, Lynn.
So, since it started, Doctors Without Borders has always been able to arrive at the crisis site and provide medical relief within days. How does it achieve this?
You know, MSF is having 40 years of experience, and especially in this area in the world, in West Africa, where we have been working in Liberia and Guinea for decades. So we know the environment, we know the local setup, we know the communities, and of course, we are not working alone. We are working in this case with the Ministry of Health and the World Health Organization, the WHO.
Moving to what we're talking about today, the first Ebola virus outbreak occurred in Zaire, Africa in 1976, followed by outbreaks in almost in every decade. What is the distribution and frequency of the Ebola virus in Africa now?
It's quite difficult to say. As you said, it's recurrent since 1976. It has mainly happened in countries like Zaire, which is today the Democratic Republic of Congo, in Sudan, in Gabon, in Congo-Brazzaville. And MSF since early 90s has really been on the forefront on trying to help reduce this outbreak and event. Today, this is the first time that we saw this kind of outbreak in West Africa. And what is specific to this outbreak is that it is really spreading in a very wide area. Usually what you see is that there are a couple of cases in restricted communities, but you don't have the geographic spread that this one is showing.
The Ebola virus disease is caused by a virus thought to originate from bats. How does it spread among humans?
So, yes, we believe that's the reservoir. It's still not completely proven. Then it seems that from the bat it moves to the great ape, like the chimpanzees, and then into human. It is mostly due to the meat and to hunters that are in contact with fluids from the body of these animals. Then from human, you are also getting the virus through body fluids. So it is usually mostly affecting the family that are caring for the patient, so the family members that are caring for the patient, but also the healthcare providers that is trying to save the person.
What are the symptoms of the disease?
It's like a normal flu. So it starts with fever, with headache, you are having muscle pains, and then later on you start developing vomiting and diarrhea. At the later stage of the disease, of course, you start bleeding, and this is why Ebola is quite famous as well. So from the nose, from the gums, and from all your body fluids. But Ebola is not a super virus that cannot be beaten by your immune system. And the virus is like any other. It can be destroyed by the body. But what makes it special is that this virus has a way to avoid the immune system for a while, and this is where it is really deadly. So there is no real cure or treatment for Ebola today, but by reinforcing the body of the patient with supportive therapy, then we see more and more people that are able to survive.
So it's important then to note, I guess, that it's no longer a death sentence.
It's a high killer, and we know that the case fatality rate for Ebola in the past is about 90% of the cases that are dying. So this is mainly in Central Africa. Now, it's a little bit too early to give the fatality rate here in West Africa, but we know that we see some people getting out of it.
MSF launched an emergency response around the 23rd of March to deal with the latest outbreak in Guinea and Liberia and West Africa. What is the current situation on the ground?
So on the ground, we are having today about 60 international specialists that are working along with 300 personnel and staff that we have been recruiting locally and working, of course, with the Guinean authorities and the WHO. We have seen today about 218 cases, both in Liberia and in Guinea. And there is, for the time being, 141 people who died from this outbreak. The location of the population that is affected is very remote. So our challenge is to be able to deploy our team in the most remote areas inside the communities to be able really to access the patient and to isolate them in order to avoid to spread this virus further.
There has been some difference in terms of the message from MSF and WHO, with MSF calling it the coming of an epidemic, while WHO saying that it's something that is under control. Why is there this difference of opinion?
I think it's very difficult today to have the global overview. I think WHO is mastering all the data from these global epidemics. MSF is referring mainly to the cases that we are seeing in our centers. What we see that is abnormal is really the spread of the cases around the region. As I said earlier, usually in other areas, the number of cases are much more concentrated and are not spread in a region like it is today. So it is an outbreak that needs to be controlled and measured. Today, to see how far we are into this outbreak is very difficult to claim.
Who are the people who are most at risk for an Ebola virus infection?
I think everybody is. Of course, if you are weaker or if you are having another pathology, your immune system is even, more fragile towards the virus and to be able to beat it. But overall, I think anybody that can be in contact with a patient can be at risk. This is why you see that healthcare workers are often one of the main victims also in such outbreaks.
So in response then to a health crisis, particularly that of a virus as deadly as Ebola, what are the priorities?
The priorities are to identify the cases and to isolate them. That means that it's a little bit like a police inquiry. You need to understand exactly from the patient perspective with whom he has been spending the last couple of days before being referred to the hospital, to understand if he has been in contact with his or her mother or brothers or, parents. And then you need really to trace these people and to do a complete mapping on the cases and all the central, the social encounters that he could get in order also to reach these people and to try to monitor their health status. Then you need absolutely to isolate the case. That means that usually what we do in an hospital compound, we create a kind of isolation camp where everybody that is entering is purely protected, where hygiene is very, very strict, and then you avoid the contamination to come out of this isolation center into other part of the hospital or the community. So the two key is identifying the patient, mapping the patient contacts, but then isolating the case and trying as much as we can to try to provide support and treatment for the patient to try to fight the virus.
MSF, as you mentioned, is working with the local Ministry of Health and the World Health Organization in Guinea and Liberia. What specific roles does MSF play in all this?
So we take in charge treatment centers. So we are working in three treatment centers in Guinea and three treatment centers in Liberia. The Ministry of Health and WHO are working in certain other treatment centers. So we are managing all the cases ourselves. One very important element also is health education and talking to the communities. You know that Ebola can create a stigma, and the population are usually quite scared about having some cases inside their community. So we need to speak to the people to explain them what is Ebola, that it can be cured, how to protect yourself, how to protect your children, how to protect the family, and if there are some suspected cases, how the people should be reacting.
Going back to your point about isolation units, could you take us through what's required to set one up, especially in remote areas?
So you can do it in various setup, but usually what we do is with tents. So we come with tents and we set up a number of tents where we are having different wards. So we are having a ward where we are observing the patient, because when the patients are coming, it's not always clear if they are affected or not. And if you mix these cases together, then they can co-infect. So you observe the patient, then you put them, if they are infected, into a special room that are completely protected, sealed all over. Nobody can enter in, nobody can enter out without being properly protected. There are very strict hygiene rules where, you know, you need to disinfect your shoes, you need to disinfect your clothes when you are going out of the center, not to contaminate the people that you are going to see afterwards. So it's very strict hygiene rules that are applied into these centers. It's quite easy. It's light logistics. You know, you can have all the equipment in a small truck. So it's a couple of tents. It's wall protection in order for the people not to be able to go. So like fences. And then it's all the medical equipment and all the protection equipment that is going to be used by the staff working into this isolation unit.
What measures need to be taken to safeguard health workers when it comes to such a highly infectious disease?
Oh, you have maybe seen on TV the footage. You need, you know, goggles. You need two or three pairs of gloves. You need a complete overall. You don't. You should not have one part of your skin that is exposed to the air. So people are really completely close into you know, protecting protective suits. There are you know, other important aspects. For example, is trying to decontaminate the entire area, so chlorination and spraying the entire camp, but also the dishes that has been used by the patient. Every single element that is, you know, inside this isolation area should be completely decontaminated and disinfected. Of course, bodies that are coming out of this treatment center should also be completely decontaminated, because we know that this is often during burials that, you know, contamination is happening. In tradition, in the traditions in West Africa, the community used to touch the body and to be really close, you know, to the body before burials, and this is something that should be absolutely avoided in such situation.
You mentioned earlier that, you know, all of us are susceptible or at risk for the virus if we're in the area. So having said that, then what factors determine survival? How do you become that 10% of people who make it through?
I think it's the capacity of the body and your immune system to fight the virus. I think a virus, like every virus, can be fought by our immune system. So if, you know, we are receiving the case in our treatment center early enough, and if we are able to support the body during that time to destroy, you know, the virus, then the person has greater chance to survive. If the person arrives very late into the disease, then most often we will not have time to support the patient to fight against the virus.
What role do the locals play in helping to react to the crisis and to fight the virus?
I think it's health personnel in hospitals that are joining our teams, and you know, it's a good opportunity also for them to be trained if any future occurrence of such diseases is coming. It's the local communities, for them to support the work that organizations like Médecins Sans Frontières are doing during these outbreaks. Having people understanding that, you know, we are here to help and that they can help us spraying health education messages along their peers and the neighboring communities. So I think, you know, fighting a virus like Ebola is a responsibility, and it's a work that, you know, everybody in the area should be taking upon him or herself.
One of the main challenges working in new places, of course, is a lack of reliable maps. How is this an issue in the current Ebola crisis?
You know, I told you earlier that you need to map every case. So every person, we should know where the person comes from, where the person could have been infected, who are the people that he has been talking to, or that he has been, you know, caring for him. And we know in this area that you are having different borders, that you are having different countries. So we really need to be able to track exactly all the life of these cases for the past weeks. If you don't have map, it's very difficult. You don't know where are the communities. We know that this area is mainly forest, so you don't have a lot of road network. It's pretty much, you know, remote. And if you don't have updated mapping, it's very difficult to know where the communities are coming from, where the cases are coming from, where the people have been traveling to. In the case of Lofa, for example, in Liberia, this is very remote. There are not a lot of accesses going through forest. It's small tracks. or tracks where, you know, a couple of trucks can go. So there is no real map in this region, or the latest map has been developed for decades ago. So having updated map is a really key tool for us to be able to be efficient.
And I suppose that's where Carton came in. How did they help with the mapping?
You know, you need specialists. Having satellite pictures or having maps and turning them into an operational tool, you need specialists to do that. As we are doctors, we are not specialists in doing maps. So most of the time we try to rely on search partners that are ready to help NGOs in the core of the crisis to bring their value into supporting the response, while us, we are benefiting from their expertise. So this is something that MSF is regularly doing.
And finally, what hopes have you for the management of this crisis in West Africa?
I think it's pretty early to give conclusions on where is outbreak going. I think we are mobilized. The international community is mobilized as well. The Guinean government, Liberian government, Ministry of Health, and WHO are mobilized. So today, I think the elements are there to be able to take care of the new cases that are arriving every day in our structure. So, you know, the outbreak is not over. Every day we are receiving new cases. And we hope, of course, for the best in the weeks to come, to see that there would be a reduction in the pattern of extension of this outbreak. So today we see everyday patients coming, but we don't see new cases really spreading outside of the known area, which is already a good sign, and that pushes us to be optimistic.
That was Remy Carrier, Executive Director of Medecins Sans Frontières, explaining the work that they're doing in Ebola. Coming up, we hear from Sylvie de Laborderie from Carton. She is a Geographic Information Systems Officer, and she explains the efforts that went into the data gathering and analysis that helped to map this infection in West Africa. On The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Carton is a non-governmental organization committed to furthering the use of Geographic Information Systems, or GIS, to improve data gathering and analysis for emergency relief, the likes of which is happening in Guinea now. Sylvie de Laborderie, GIS Officer of Carton, explains the collaboration with MSF. Sylvie, so how did Carton help with the mapping?
Okay, so Carton ONG is partner with MSF Switzerland since last July. We are their GIS unit, and we start to create some emergency maps for MSF with Ian Typhoon in the Philippines in November. And for this Ebola outbreak, This was a very good opportunity to deploy a GIS officer in the field with epidemiologists. So Carton ONG have found a GIS expert and sent to the field, and we support him with mapping. So I explained to you how we did that.
Yes, please, because it sounds really interesting, but it's not something that I think many people were aware even existed.
Okay. When MSF team arrived on the ground, there were no maps and not a lot of information. So we decided to task humanitarian OpenStreetMap team. It's called HOT. So for that, we asked some satellite imagery providers. We buy some images and we give these images to the community, and all volunteers of humanitarian OpenStreetMap team start to digitalize the three cities, so Gekedu, Masenta, and Kissidougou. And it was very amazing, incredible. In less than 12 hours, we got the first city, Gekedu. Gekedu was mapped, all the city was mapped, road and buildings. And in 20 hours, we got the three cities mapped.
Why was it so important, to have the maps for this outbreak?
So with information geographic, we can the team on the ground can localize each patient, and they can localize building per building. And with that, they can, how can I say, GIS is a support for the operations. They can decide whether they can localize each patient, they can localize village from where the patient are, they can localize the patient zero.
Right.
And, yeah.
So in order for all that to happen, what kind of information did the maps need to contain? So when the volunteers began to digitalize the maps, what did they have to put in?
First, the road for access, and second, every building. And after that, all location of all villages around Gekedu, and some palm trees as well.
And
every detail, actually.
Okay, and the process of digitalizing the map, what exactly do you mean by that?
So volunteers are all around the world, and they are connected to internet, and they can use OSM. And on OSM, they just draw the road and draw the building, because we have the image, so they can draw on the image. We have every detail, road, buildings, and after that, each object is directly go on a server, and that is directly available for everyone because it's a public platform.
How do you verify the information then if there are so many people contributing towards it?
Good question. This is a very OpenStreetMap is very organized, so everyone digitalized, and there is some how can I say, master volunteers, and they verify every data. But you know, it's just building and road, it's easy to verify.
Yep. And what role would a GIS officer such as yourself play?
Mainly he creates a base map. It's really the basic information are very essential, so he creates base maps, and he can add some information from the ground, like a quarter or neighborhood of the city. It provides some distance between villages, or it can help to localize all villages as well. And in a second time, it can map the medical data.
One of the most interesting things that have come out of this is how quickly the maps became populated. How did it grow so quickly?
I think it's because it's very MSF is very popular, and when we task OT to digitalize, you know, volunteers like geek in their home, they are very happy to help with their connectivity, internet connection. And they can help humanitarian people, and it's very famous for them.
How do you think what learnings will you be taking to future mapping projects from the work that you've done in West Africa?
It was the first time we did that. The important thing, I think, is it's very important to have someone on the ground, and because it can provide some feedback between the community and the need from the field, which area you want to be mapped, which it can help as well. You know, it can say this kind of roof is more hurt or more building. So this is very important to have someone on the ground for that.
In your opinion, how will open source imaging and public participation change future medical relief efforts?
Yeah, as I said, we are support. This is very important for everyone, for medical, for water and sanitation, for all humanitarian people to have access to open source image and open source data. And they can answer faster, and they can put in their operation. They can work in a comprehensive area. It's amazing, I think.
Finally, Carto NG and Doctors Without Borders have been cooperating since Typhoon Haiyan in the Philippines, as you mentioned. How has the cooperation evolved from when it first began?
We start in July, and first of all, we are partnered to implement the GIS strategy in MSF Switzerland, and we have created some base map in the country of operation and in the area of operation, and we are building a map center for them. And we get in touch, I think, by a network.
Thank you very much, Sylvie. And that was Sylvie de la Borderie, Geographic Information Systems Officer for Carto NG. And she was telling us about the collaboration between Médecins Sans Frontières and Cartong to assist Ebola aid efforts in West Guinea via digital mapping on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.